We think of the following word to describe Torah. Torah is described as emes, as the truth, the absolute, unconditional, unqualified truth. When human beings say that word truth, they conjure up binary images. There's only one truth, yes or no, on or off, zero or one, dark or light, can't be both. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond binary equations. That's not the way he operates. And then Har Sinai, the Ritva says in Erevin, the Amshel Shlomo says, based on the Gemara in Erevin, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, that both opinions are the word of an eternal, everlasting, infinite Hashem. Why is the word divrei Elokim chayim? Because Hashem is eternal, because Hashem is beyond time and place, because Hashem is unlike any part of our experience, Hashem can operate in multiple truths. And at Har Sinai, the Ritva says, and at Har Sinai, the Amshel Shlomo says, Hashem did not give one truth. He held up an object to Moshe, and he said, this object under the following conditions is Tameh. And this object under the following conditions is Tahor. And they both represent truths in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind and will, because his will isn't binary. There's a Dutch physicist, Niels Bohr, who once said, or writer, that the opposite of a true statement is a false statement. The opposite of a profound statement is another profound statement. Hashem doesn't deal in true and false. He deals in profundities. And Reb Meir used to walk into the Beis Medrash, the Gemara says, and he would try to trace both of those truths. One person was capable of tracing both of those truths. And he wouldn't only elucidate or analyze how something can be both Tameh and Torah at once. He would actually develop 49 flowcharts, 49 different logical analyses that could lead to it being Tameh, and 49 logical analyses that could lead to it being Torah. And at Har Sinai, the Amshel Shlomo says, people were receiving whatever versions they were capable of. Maybe not everyone was of the caliber of a Meir. Not everyone was of the caliber of receiving all 49 approaches towards one conclusion or being able to see both sides of the same coin, as it were. But that's why they're different people, and that's why each had their own tzinors, as the Amshel Shlomo says, or Shlomo Luria. They each had their own conduits and trails of Torah that they received. And when the Torah says, V'chalam ro'im yisakalos, which is a strange phrase in Parshas Yisro, they saw the sounds, which we normally interpret it to mean they saw the thunder in a way that led to sensory symbiosis or sensory, the merging of senses of sight and sound. For the Amshel Shlomo, it means they were able to see the other streams of Torah that they couldn't understand being understood by other people different from them. And Machlokis isn't necessarily the breakdown of a one truth that was given in Har Sinai. Machlokis means you just see different vantage points of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. Now, obviously, it isn't a free-for-all, and obviously there are large systems of generalities, of principles, of foundational ideas that are absolute. But within that system, the system is so infinite that Hashem's will about a specific scenario, about a specific situation, can be both Tameh and be both Tahor. That's why Tahor is compared to wine. Because wine is different from person to person. It comes from grapes. It can come from the same grape. It can come from the same grape in the same climate. But the fermentation process and the culling process and the sugar and the yeast and it'll be very different. Human beings will have different versions of that one inclusive, all-encompassing Torah of Hashem's will. And for years and years in our Masorah, people knew Torah well enough that they could unify these seemingly different opinions and find the common denominator. Their minds were strong enough, the knowledge of Torah was strong enough. And there weren't any machloksin. Not that there weren't any differences, but they were able to see the commonality between different opinions. Those who are listening to this are a little bit older. When you're young, it's hard to see the common denominator between differences. As you grow older, you're able to see, well, where do they share common logic and where do they deviate? It doesn't mean that people all practiced halacha the same way. There were Batei Dinim, there were Sanhedrin. people reached different conclusions, and they actually acted upon those different conclusions. They weren't wildly different, but there weren't machlokes. People were able to say that both sides were legit and both sides were valid, and they practiced as different manifestations, because in the world of practice, you can only practice the halacha one way, even though you see both sides as reflecting that integrated truth. And that's what the Gemara means when it says that throughout history, there were very few of any machloksin until the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel were not the language of the Gemara. It's the Gemara Sanhedrin and also appears in the Yishalmi. Until there were so many Talmidim, Shelo Shimshu Kol Tzarcham. It's not that their level of learning declined or the level of learning deteriorated, but in part because they were lazy, according to some versions, in part because there's just too many Talmidim, they didn't have that personal relationship with their Rebbeim. The language of the Yishalmi is Shelo Shimshu Es Rebbeim Kol Tzarcham. Information you could get from a book. But to understand how seemingly contradictory information really isn't as contradictory and as binary and as exclusive as you would think, you need a Rebbe. You need to hear from an older person, someone who can help you fuse seemingly disparate parts of the tradition. And they lost that, either again because they weren't able to maintain the mental and emotional tenacity, or as the Gemara sounds like, there's just too many Talmidim. So they lost the ability to see the validity of the other side. They lost the ability to fuse two seemingly dichotomous positions. And then Machloksin broke out. They were unable to unify. They were unable to incorporate. And that's what happened in our Sinai, according to the Marsha. If anyone's listening to this and knows where to find this Marsha, I'm assuming it's in Shabbos. I don't have a Gemara in Shabbos in front of me on Peches. Marsha says that at Har Sinai, there weren't 49 different versions of Torah delivered. There were 600,000 different versions of Torah delivered, based on the amount of Jews who received the Torah. And only by combining those 600,000 views do you get the full sweep and the full enormity of Torah. Now, the reason it's so difficult for some people listening to this to understand it is because of the era we live in. Because what I've just described is the theoretical, conceptual Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we also live in a real world. And the real world of human activity is binary. There's only one way to make Kiddush. There's only one way to bring a Korban Pesach. There's only one way. But every single halachic detail. And as much as you can postulate that in theory, in Hashem's mind, each has validity and each represents a different symbolic element of Kiddush, of Shabbos, of Korban Pesach, of whatever aspect of halacha, there is a apparent machlokas. There is a world of practice and of action, our world, Olam Hazeh, that requires there to be one implementable truth, executable truth, actionable truth. Now, throughout the generations, there was a great degree of pluralism. People read sugyos, analyzed, they didn't read because there was a Torah Shabbat, and they came to different conclusions, and they practiced those different conclusions. But at certain points in history, for the sake of unified halachic practice or rabbinic authority, there had to be a clamping down upon the ability to have pluralistic or different approaches. So, for example, we read about how aggressive Rabbi Gamliel was in imposing his will upon Rabbi Yehoshua, particularly making him violate that debate about when Yom Kippur would fall. And Rabbi Gamliel did not allow Rabbi Yehoshua to practice his own Yom Kippur. In fact, he forced him to violate his own version of Yom Kippur based on his calculation of the days. And he forced him to attend Rabbi Gamliel's palace on the day that Rabbi Yehoshua thought it was Yom Kippur. Well, if Rabbi Yehoshua was a Talmud Chacham and he came up with a different version of the calculation of Yom Kippur, why couldn't he implement his own halachic version? The answer is that specifically in the days of the Beis HaMikdash Sheni, where the validity and authority of Torah Shabbat Peh was being questioned so fiercely by the Tzidkim, the role of our Chachamim as arbiters or arbitrators of the halachic system and of the Torah Shabbat Peh was crucial. It was absolutely central. It was vital to the sustenance of our tradition. And there was less room for flexibility and pluralism. You see a similar story a generation later of Elazar ben Hyrcanus and the Tanur Shel Achnai, the very famous machlokas in the Gemara Bava Metzia, where they had a debate about a reconstituted oven and whether it's mekabel tumah. And when Rabbi Eliezer dared to disagree with the majority opinion, he was put into excommunication. So there's a natural tension between the eternal Torah that we'll all study in Olam Haba, when there isn't going to be mitzvos, there won't be, there aren't mitzvos and executionable, actionable. It's all just theoretical will of Hashem, and we'll pursue every nugget, every vista, every data point, every element of Hashem's will, even when they contradict, but our minds will expand. We'll liberate ourselves from the constraints of binaryism and the world we inhabit, which has to be halacha, actionable. And even though different people can come to different conclusions, sometimes history and sometimes the flow of our tradition doesn't allow it. Another turning point happened in the 16th century, where Yosef Cairo and Svat correctly assessed that history had to turn towards less of a pluralistic experience. Jews were scattered across the globe. The Spanish Inquisition had led to encounters between Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazic Jews that were leading to a lot of halachic tensions. The printing press had proliferated written works, and the inflation of written works led to the devaluation of the authority of any one written work. People didn't know how to discriminate between legitimate halachic voices and just copycat halachic works. So he organized and systematized halachic practice, and he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. The Yamshel Shlomo, who I mentioned before, was the champion of pluralism and different approaches to Hashem's will, strongly opposed it. But history has ruled in favor of the Beis Yosef, of the Shulchan Aruch, of Yosef Cairo. And in 2021, when I'm recording this year, there is no legitimate, or very rarely do we have the legitimate right to circumvent the Shulchan Aruch and reestablish pluralistic halachic practice. Yisrael created a different halachic environment. There's enough pluralism within the Shulchan Aruch between Sephardi and Ashkenazi, between different opinions of what the Beis Yosef meant, what the Shulchan Aruch meant. So there's a tension between the way Torah exists theoretically, Elu ve'elu, 49 ways to prove it's Tameh, 49 ways to prove that it's Tahar, wine, different versions, pluralism, Elu ve'elu, and trying to integrate and find the common denominator between those two, as opposed to a world of practice and halacha, which demands a one-way approach, and then some pivotal moments in halacha demands greater conformity and less pluralism. But because we live in a post-Shulchan Aruch world, we sometimes allow, some people allow, that lack of binarism, the fact that there's one halachic ruling, to bleed into their view of Torah. If there's only one position in the Gemara that makes sense, the other positions are just corruptions or degradations of the tradition. That is a very, very incorrect and flawed way to view Torah. And it tries to take Hashem's infinite will and shrink it to human-sized actionable truths. And of course, that's why in the world of Torah, some people are poskim, some people are lamdanim. The role of a posik is to find the dominant position that we should adhere to. The role of a lamdan is to try to find its many different opinions to represent the different vistas of Hashem's Ratzel. So as we make our way towards Har Sinai, let's remind ourselves of this natural, healthy tension between Taras Chaim and Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim and Taras HaAdam, in a world of Adam and of halachic practice.